Okay, well, I'm excited to get to tell you about my trip to Israel. We left Sunday morning at 7:30 in the morning. I had to get up at 5:30. I wasn't real excited about that other than where I was going. But since I was actually traveling with Eddie, our congregational leader, he and I flew out of Akron Canton together. And so this first picture is of us at the airport. We were going to leave from Akron Canton. And then we went to Philadelphia, and when we were in Philadelphia, we were looking at our flight that was going from Philadelphia to Newark, and we kind of went, is that really our airplane? We were on a propeller puddle jumper. So I was really thrilled about that idea, but we survived the flight, and we got to Newark, and we met up with the group, and Jane met each of us, and we were given buttons. Mine and Liam is famous for their button name tags. And so throughout the whole tour, we all had our buttons that told our name and where we were from and that we were with the Lion and Lamb Israel Tour 2010. And El Al has extremely tight security, and so they had podiums set up that looked like music stands like you can see in this picture. And Monty and his wife Lynn are being questioned, and then the other couple in the background was also on our tour.
Well, and what kind of questions did they ask?
They wanted to know why we were going to Israel. Had we ever been out of the country before? Did we know anyone in the land? They started asking me a lot of questions because I wore a head covering and I wasn't Jewish. So a typical American woman doesn't wear a head covering. And they profiled me, and since I didn't fit in any of their boxes, they pulled me for extra security. And so I go through, all they tell me is that they're going to have to check my handbags. And that's all they tell me. And so I go up to the TSA to go through the security line, and then TSA explains to me that your bags have been flagged and your ticket has been stamped, requiring you to go through extra security. So we're going to have to do a pat-down. We're going to have to hand search your luggage. And then once we finish that, you will have to go and see wherever El Al told you that you needed to go. And I'm like, you have got to be kidding me. And so...
just like Carol.
you know, by this point, I'm starting to get into a panic of, I can't believe what they're having to do. And TSA was very kind to me. They were aggravated that El Al had flagged me. They actually looked at me and went, they flagged you? And I'm like, so they had a lady who did the pat down, and she did it absolutely by the book, inappropriateness. There was nothing inappropriate about the pat-down. There was no groping like we've all heard. It was really El Al that caused all the trouble for me. So then I went to the El Al, and the scariest thing about El Al is that they don't communicate the way we communicate here in the States. TSA explained everything that they were going to do and why they needed to do it. El Al just takes your luggage, says, wait here, and that's all. They don't tell you, you know, we're going to go search it. We'll be back in 10 minutes. No explanations. And so I'm one of the last four ladies, and thankfully Eddie was staying right there with me and keeping me calm. And I'm thinking, this is a real great way to start my trip to Israel. But there was four of us ladies and waiting for them to finish security procedures with us. And they're calling, final boarding call for flight 27 to Tel Aviv. And we're going, are we even going to make our flight? And so finally one of the women stomps her foot and says, they're calling for a final boarding call. Are we even going to make our flight? And so then they finally explain to us that, you know, they know we're doing extra security procedures. You will make your flight. The plane won't leave without you. And within a couple of minutes after that, they did finish up, and we were released to go board on the plane. But what was really interesting, was almost comical, the ridiculousness of the security, was that I had bought a neck pillow because I forgot mine, and so I had bought one at one of the little stands there, and Eddie was keeping it for me. Well, he handed it to me as we walked to the plane. I had already been released, but they escorted us to the gate, and since he handed it to me before I was actually on the plane, they had to take this neck pillow that I had the receipt for having bought behind security back to their security machines, run it through X-ray, and then bring it back to me. I'm like, just let me on the plane.
Yeah, but you must understand that. There's a lot of people in Israel from bombings every year.
Mm-hmm. So we were finally on the plane. This is actually looking down on the New York Harbor. You can actually see Ellis Island and the Statue of Liberty in the middle. So we were served dinner on the plane.
Is Eddie stoned or something? Look at that.
No, Eddie wasn't a happy camper about his dinner. It was beef over noodles or something. So, and this is actually the third try. The poor lady who was trying to take the picture, she didn't even know hardly what a camera was. She was an Israeli. And so this was the third try, and it actually got both of us in there. But you can see the Uno cards down there by my hand, and we actually played Uno. I was surprised that I convinced Eddie to play Uno, and we played. And we had a lot of fun, and we're just laughing. And he won 5 games, and I won 5 games. And he's like, so do you want to break the tie? And we decided that, no, we were just going to leave it permanently tied. This picture is a little fuzzy, but you can see the map, and it starts in the left where you can just barely see New York, and we actually flew from Newark, New York area, up past Maine, through the northern part of Canada. They kept us up towards Iceland and Greenland. They wanted to keep us as close to the shore as possible. Then we flew over London, Rome. Yes. All the way over Athens, and then into Tel Aviv. And the plane had, I think, between 400 and 500 people. We flew over on a 777, which was really nice. So, yes.
Did they have a woman pilot?
We never saw the pilots.
Must have been a woman because a man would have made a straight shot.
But what was really interesting was the plane had, it was about a quarter of the passengers were Hasidic Jews on there. And Hasidic Jew is the black and white coat Jews with the hats and the yes, that's the one. So they were. It was interesting. The people in front of me were Hasidic, and it ended up where there was a woman beside a Hasidic Jew, and it wasn't his wife. And there was another situation like that, an aisle over in a couple. And so the Hasidic gentleman comes over and he goes, ma'am, you need to move. As a man, I cannot sit by another woman who is not my wife. And so they literally had the women switch seats so that they were sitting side by side, which was really interesting. Apparently the woman was Israeli because she didn't give him any trouble. It was like, okay, that's fine.
Well, see, now, if that was Sue, she would have said, listen, Jack, you're going to move.
So they had a screen that was in the back of the previous seats, and it showed us constantly the ground speed, the altitude, and then it also allowed us, if we wanted to watch movies or TV, they had certain things pre-programmed in, radio. This particular picture is of the passenger announcement, which was the preparing for landing. So you can see that we're already down to just over 10,000 feet. And this was our first glimpse of land. We were seeing the shore of Israel as we were coming in over the Mediterranean. 10-hour flight there. I didn't sleep. Nobody slept on the flight other than Eddie. Eddie was the only person to sleep on the entire flight. And he's sitting beside me just snoring away. And Monty goes by and goes, how can you do that? I wish I could sleep like that. So this is actually over Tel Aviv coming into the airport. Ben-Gurion Airport is where we came. And we could look back out over the tarmac. Now, I think this was interesting. The pond in the center of this picture was actually a fountain that would shoot up every so often. It would, shoot up, and then it would drop from the ceiling. There's, a dome in the ceiling, and it would drop. And it was really fascinating. In fact, Nehemiah Gordon and I are friends on Facebook, and he had a picture from his recent trip to the U.S., and when he came back in, he actually managed to capture the water dropping. And I'm like, I know where that fountain is. So then our group started gathering. We had 39 total in our group. 8 of them had flown in the day before from Texas. One was flying in that afternoon on a direct flight from California. So we had 30 of us already together. And not a single one of us was missing any luggage, which was a miracle. They had told us to be prepared with 2 to 3 days of luggage in our carry-on in case we needed it, but nobody was missing a single bag. So we were kind of glad to find seats. Britt Avery, which was our American representative who booked all the tours and coordinated everything, he and his wife actually go over to the land when they have quite a few tours coming through, and we were one of the last tours from a 6-week series of touring. And so he was there to greet us. And then Rafi, who was our Israeli tour guide, he is an Orthodox Jew. But he also was Monty's tour guide last year in 2009 when he took a tour. And he started asking some really neat questions. And I'll tell a couple of stories about Rafi as we go through. But he was very fascinating. He's been a tour guide for 37 years. So this is our bus that I would later affectionately name the Green Grasshopper. So, and Armand was our driver. Armand was a believer. He is Jewish by birth, but he has been a believer for the last 2 years, and he did get to share his testimony with me and a couple others kind of privately. As believers in the land, they can suffer a lot of persecution. He said if people were publicly aware of his belief, they would try to make him lose his job. They would try to make him look bad. They would do anything and everything to make him fail. So they can't be open about their faith like we can here in the land, but they live it by example, and then others begin to ask them questions. So there is Brent welcoming us on the bus and Monty kind of giving us some welcoming instructions. And at this point, we had actually gotten our Israeli cell phones. So I was able to give Mommy a call and let her know that I was there safely. So this was coming out of the airport, and you can actually begin to see the street signs where it says Tel Aviv or Jerusalem, and it's written in Hebrew, Arabic, and English. All of the road signs were written in three languages. The first building that I saw after we left the airport was a UPS building. and, of course, they have security. You can actually see the gentleman in yellow was carrying a machine gun. We would see machine guns, and we would walk past soldiers every single day, and you didn't pay any attention to him. I mean, that was just the way of life there. And we saw, it was, a lot of people compared it either to Florida or California type landscape because it's right there in that same type of, you know, climate and type of trees. But the produce that they grow there is absolutely amazing. They also are really good at tailgating. There was typically about a foot and a half in between the vehicles, and I just was absolutely shocked. Yes?
It sounds like East LA, machine guns, tailgating.
Right. Now, I'm going to actually switch over here to this video real quick. You'll probably hear it without any trouble, but if you want to see it, you might want to get a little close. This is actually of us on the bus. Rafi, our tour guide, also sings a lot, and so he had us singing all through the land. We sang in various different places, and that was on the bus, and that is praying for the peace of Israel, right?
That was Shalom.
Shalom, okay.
Shalom to you.
Shalom to you. Okay, thank you, Mark. So he thought that would be a really neat way for us to start out our tour. And later that day, he would teach us Hatikva, which is the Israeli national anthem, in Hebrew, and we would end up singing that too. But you can see we were already beginning to see the agriculture in the land. And this is actually water heaters on top of the different homes. They buy their water heaters that are solar powered for $800, and in California it would cost us $3,500. But it is enough to... Right. It is enough to... I know, I should have brought one home. It's 120 liters. It's enough to...
Why would you bring one home?
Stick it in a suitcase, I guess.
Yeah,
I would have been pulled for security. They are enough for a family of five, and they only need 2 hours of sun a day to provide hot water. So everything is solar-powered, which is exactly what they need it to do. And we saw the high-speed transit trains that they use because... Not many people actually own cars. We saw a lot of motorcycles which wove in and out of traffic. And it was interesting, the cars, if you buy a car, you actually get taxed, a luxury tax, which is a 92% tax. So their least expensive cars there are $27,000 to $29,000.
Wow. So.
This is Sherman. I had to introduce Sherman to you. He was an African American, and he was number 39 on our bus. We counted off from 1 to 39 so that we made sure we had everybody. And Monty...
made the African American guy right in the back of the
bus. Well, he actually picked it. He actually picked it. He was wonderful. Monty gave us the example that he was from Texas, or no, Kansas, and that they had cattle there in Kansas. And so we had a choice of them either, you know, being the cattle herder and, you know, with the whips in the back, making sure we were all going somewhere on time, or he could do it the biblical way, and he would be in the front, and he'd say, "Lyman Lamb, time to go to the bus, time to go here," and we could all follow him like sheep. Well, Monty played the role of the shepherd, and Sherman, with all of his energy and his fun-loving spirit, was the wonderful cowboy in the back, making sure that we never left without anybody. So, we got a first glimpse of the Mediterranean as we actually went to pick up the group of from Texas. There was 8 of them. And this was our tour host, Monty, and his wife, Lynn, and Eddie. And then we headed to the Independence Hall. Now, while we were traveling, because at this point we had been on the bus for about an hour, and it's 7 o'clock in the morning, we've had no sleep since we left our homes in the U.S., except for Eddie, who slept on the plane, and everybody else. But Rafi was giving us some lessons about the history of Israel. So we actually learned that Israel is 395 miles north to south and 75 miles east to west. So it's really not a big place. Exactly. There's 7.5 million people, and of that, 5.5 million are Jews. 20% are Orthodox, 40% Reformed, and 40% are Conservative. And all the Jews do keep Sabbath in the land. 1.5 million are Muslims, and the remaining rest are minorities. Now, Israel is actually a socialist government, so they subsidize bread, margarine, education. And your minimum income is $1,000. Whether you work or not, you're going to get $1,000. So a lot of the Hasidic Jews in the land actually don't work. They go to yeshiva all day long. They study all day. And their families get the $1,000 minimum.
Unless you're a minority, they don't give you anything.
I don't know. They said everybody that is an Israeli citizen gets $1,000. Muslim, Jews, doesn't matter.
Is that monthly, yearly?
Monthly.
Monthly.
And that's converting it to American money. 33. I know. 33% of the Israeli budget goes to security.
Where'd they find that one out?
20% of the budget goes to education. And then they pay $65 to $75 a month for medical care. They have Medicaid. So when they were established in 1947, there were 600,000 Jews then, and now they have 5.5 million. However, the U.S. has 5.5 to 7 million. So we actually here in the U.S. have more Jews than they do in Israel. Every year... in New York City than Israel. In 1947, there was absolutely no agriculture in the land. And from 1947 to current, they now make $10 billion a year off of fruits and vegetables.
Well, but they didn't really own it in 1947.
They were able to live there, but it wasn't the state of Israel. They had the rights to live there, but it wasn't a nation. So 15% of their water comes from desalination, 30% of it comes from the Galilee. And while they're socialist in their government, they're also the only democracy in the Middle East. And they have 175 million Muslims surrounding Israel. So the Mediterranean Sea has a 3.8% salination rate, and the Dead Sea has a 33% salination rate. So we would actually go down to see the Dead Sea, which was really interesting. It was dead, but it was interesting. I'll tell you about that when we get there. Jericho is the oldest town in Israel. It's 10,000 years old. And Jerusalem is the... Achor is the next oldest at 3,500. Jerusalem and Joppa are 3,400. So we went to Independence Hall next, which is actually on a boulevard. And you can see here how, even though land is precious, there is land in the middle of the street and sidewalks. And there is even a playground in the middle for the children. This boulevard was funded by the Rothschild family, which is from America. Monty kind of gave us an introduction. And then we had a tour guide there from Independence Hall. And she explained that we were in the town of Tel Aviv. And there was 50 families who lived in the town of Joppa that wanted to found a new town. And so they decided they were going to found Tel Aviv. And, of course, as we all know, Jews have great debates, and they all have multiple opinions, so they were trying to decide what to name the town. And there was a book and that had been translated into Hebrew, and it was in English. It means old new land, and it was written about Israel. And when they translated it into Hebrew, they named it the book Tel Aviv. And a tel is an old hill made out of debris, and Aviv means spring or life, so that it represents the new. And so they decided to name this town Tel Aviv because the families had been in the land for a long time. They were old families in the sense of having been around for a while, and then Aviv because it was a new town. And so that's how we got Tel Aviv. But the first thing, this was fascinating, the first thing they built in Tel Aviv was not a house. It wasn't a synagogue, nothing we would think of. It was a Hebrew school. This is actually where the declaration of Israel as a state, as a nation, was made. You'll see the actual picture a little bit later on of them making the declaration. And so she showed us one of the copies of the declaration and explained that. Of course, they sent out these invitations, which you can see in the bottom right, to 350 people. And there was two instructions, one of where to be and the other of please do not let anybody know. This is to be a secret for security reasons. Now, the invitations went out on Thursday afternoon. The ceremony was to be on Friday afternoon at 4 o'clock before Shabbat came on. And the next morning, all of the Friday newspapers' headlines were that Ben Gurion was going to declare Israel a nation at 4 o'clock in Tel Aviv. So I'm like, Jews keeping secrets? Okay. Or Americans. So we actually sang Hatikva in the Independence Hall. While we were there. And then this is a picture of them actually, Ben Gurion, declaring the state of Israel as a state, nation. And this is the actual Declaration of Independence that they had on display there that we could see with the original signatures in blue. And then there's Eddie and I in front of the ceremony area. Now, this was really interesting. This is a map of partition plan. And it was UN Resolution... I believe it's 181, which declared Israel a nation. And if you look at the map, this is the map of how the land was to be divided. The orange section is what Israel would receive. The yellow section was to be Palestine. And the blue, which is around Jerusalem, is to be an international city. So the dividing of the land is actually technically already on the books. It has just never been enacted. So it was really sad to see, and you can notice on the map that there's two sections that are like less than a mile wide. I mean, try defending this land. It's almost impossible. So in the actual Declaration of Independence, when we went through the Holocaust Museum the last day, Eddie and I stood there and just read it line by line, and he was explaining to me that in the Declaration of Independence, Israel made a covenant with the UN, that they would abide by the UN resolution. So while they founded Israel as a nation, they also signed their own death sentence, which will eventually be enacted against them. So it was really sad to see the birth and yet the death at the same time.
It's interesting to see that Jerusalem, the international city, is in the middle of the Palestinian land. It's not between the two.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Here's the actual invitation. And then the microphones where they declared Israel a nation and the placard that they had there. And as you can see, it's really a very nondescript-looking building. The reason this particular building was chosen is that the windows are all very, very high up. And so they felt that it was a safer building to be in, that a gunman would have a difficult time actually shooting into it. So then we went to Rabin Square, which was where Prime Minister Rabin gave his famous speech and was later shot to death. And so we actually read his speech. Eddie read it to the entire group there. And then we went over, and you can actually see in this picture, on the left-hand side is where Prime Minister Rabin was standing. On the right-hand side is where the gunman was standing. And the circle marked with the number 9 was a member of the Mossad. And there was also other circles scattered further out where the security was. The Mossad was his bodyguards. I mean, there's one standing right beside him. And yet he was shot point blank at, 2 feet, basically?
It's just like if somebody wants to kill the president. If he doesn't care what happens to him, he can kill the president. The Secret Service is going to be right on, But he can still do it if he doesn't care what happens to him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, there is also a conspiracy controversy theory that he was being shot with blanks, and that's why he was able to kind of break through the ranks of the Mossad, that the actual, quote, killer was shooting him with blanks, and that he was not dead when he was put in the car to go to the hospital, and that when he got to the hospital, he had been shot, and it was done by one of his own Mossad, because it was an assassination attempt to make him more popular as a prime minister. So there's a whole controversy, kind of like the Kennedy situation, mm-hmm. same thing with his... But they had a memorial wall, and they also had a plaque here at this place, Yitzhak Rabin, Prime Minister and Minister of Defense, was murdered in the struggle for peace. We went for lunch, and this is a shawarma falafel shop. And in Israel, you will not find ice cream and meat in the same shop. Mm-hmm. So, but what was really interesting to me was how they did the shawarmas. This is Jane and I goofing off. They shaved... Oh, sorry. Jane is Monty's assistant who is on the tour, and she would end up kind of mothering me on the tour.
Mama Jane.
Mama Jane, yes. they actually, here's the shawarma where they have the meat roasting on like these spit rounds, and you can see how they just took this machine that looks like a saw and shaved it off, which was really fascinating, and then they just put it directly in your sandwiches. And after lunch, we got to go in the market and wander around a little bit.
Were the sandwiches any good?
Oh, the sandwiches were good. Outstanding. So, yes. They had bread.
Look at all that bread.
Look at all this market. This market is actually where I got my mom's and my head coverings. And the most expensive head covering, which neither of us have on today, was 25 shekels, and the ones we have on today, right now, are worth 10 shekels.
Convert.
And 10 shekels would convert to $3, basically.
Two and a half to $3,
right.
Oh, man. And online, they were, what, at least
10? Online, they were $10. Mm. So, we drove past our... we drove past our hotel, the Dan Panorama, as we headed to Joppa. And it was really interesting. In Old Joppa, we saw a lot of really expensive artsy-type shops in there. But we also saw this orange tree growing in a ball that was suspended by three chains. And that ball was probably about 3 to 4 feet tall. I mean, it was massive. Mm-hmm. And you kind of get a sense for what Joppa looks like. It's really tight.
What do you think for a tree like that for, huh?
It was show. Because Joppa is known for its oranges. It was an orange tree. Joppa is known for Joppa oranges. But
I don't want any idea. She already got me building
stuff. No, I don't want a suspended tree. Like Polly would go up there just as it was about to drop and it would fall on me. No.
Now, Joppa is, known for where Tabitha was healed. This is also a town Jonah was in. It's where Peter had his famous dream about the clean and unclean, and it's also where Simon the Tanner lived. So Eddie would end up teaching on Joppa and Peter's dream the night after this. Not this night. We were all exhausted. So, but in each site, you can see Monty teaching here. Each site we would stop and at least have a brief teaching. Sometimes they varied from 5 minutes. Sometimes they were as long as 20 minutes. But it wasn't that we went and we looked at old buildings and went, oh, that's a nice old building. No, we went and we understood its importance biblically. And we even found some really pretty flowers, too. Now, this is an old gate in the background. You can see the really old stones in the very background that was probably about 2,000 years old. And in the front is a recreation of what the city gate would have looked like. So they were very good at keeping the old and maybe giving you something to give you an idea of what it would have looked like. Now, this is a date tree. It looks like a palm tree, but it is actually a date tree. And in the Bible, when it talks about honey, it's actually talking about date honey. The honey was made from dates, not from bees. So we actually did get to taste date honey, and we had chicken cooked in date honey, which was delicious. And while we were up here in Old Joppa, we had a beautiful view down to the Mediterranean and got some really nice pictures. This is a picture zoomed in on Tel Aviv, and I sat here and I counted the number of cranes. There are 7 cranes in this picture of how much building they're doing. They can't keep up with the amount of people that are living in the land and the needs for buildings. We also saw some boats out on the Mediterranean. And then after we went to our hotel and got settled in, this hotel that we were staying at, the Dam Panorama, was the best hotel food-wise. They met us with glasses of chilled limeade at the bus, and then we were given limeade. Then we were given our key packets, and what we do is you get your keys with your name and your key, and if you have a roommate, you know who your roommate is, and then you tag your luggage with stickers that have your room number on it, and then the bellhops all take your heavier bags up to the room for you. You don't have to worry about it. About 10, 15 minutes after you're up in the room, your luggage is being delivered. You don't have to worry about tipping or anything like that. It's already taken care of as part of your tour. And then your last morning at the hotel, you sit them outside by a certain time, and the bellhops take them down to the buses. And then when we go down to the bus, we have to get to the bus a little earlier that morning because we have to identify our bags. Our bus driver will not put our bags on until they see us, recognize us as someone on their tour, and say, "This is my bag, this is my bag." They don't want any luggage that should not be on that bus for security reasons. But we went to the market after we got settled in. One of the older couples on the tour and I went, and we were just kind of walking through it as we went down to the Mediterranean, and both of us ladies needed some flip-flops because my beach shoes weren't working and she didn't have any. We were going to go down to the Mediterranean, but we saw cheese like in this dairy case, and this is just an open-air market, and they had all sorts of things. And then we actually walked down to the Mediterranean, and we saw some schoolgirls doing some things off in the grass. We even saw a wedding couple getting photographed along the Mediterranean. And we spotted our first kitty cat. I think we saw at least one kitty cat every single day. They said kitties are very popular in Israel because you don't have to walk them, and they're great for catching the mice, whereas the dogs require a lot of maintenance and you're in a metropolitan area. So here I am actually in the Mediterranean, and I did bring home some shells from the Mediterranean and in front of our hotel.
Military?
No, seashells, Cliff.
Remember, she already had trouble.
I already had trouble with security. I didn't need any more trouble. So this is the second night after new moon. You can't see it really well, but if you look really close in the middle, you can actually see the new moon. The next morning, we got up and we left our hotel and we drove through Tel Aviv. So here's some pictures, just kind of driving through Tel Aviv, and you can see. They even had green spaces in there and the trains, and now we're starting to drive out into the country. We're headed up towards the Galilee.
This is Tuesday
morning, and we're actually all starting to feel sane at this point. Now, this picture here is an electricity plant, which we'll see another shot of where they unload the docks when we're at Caesarea on the shore. But they power it by coal to create their electricity. This is Caesarea's National Park, the Roman Theater. And we would go in here to the theater. You can see the Roman arch and our group starting to gather. The bottom row is original. The higher rows are recreations. So this is from about 2,000 years. A lot of the things in the area were. And there's Monty in front of the theater and myself. So, no, actually, theaters are a half circle. And they would do theatrical performances. The amphitheaters, which is the full circle, is what you had to watch out for. Now, in the theater, which was interesting, this is all in Caesarea on the shore. There are two Caesareas, Caesarea Philippi and Caesarea on the shore. But in the theater, the Romans were pagans, and they wanted to control the culture. They didn't really care about the religion. They knew the culture would actually have more influence over time. And so they created the theaters, and which became very popular. And the word vomit actually comes from the theaters because they used a word, the word that vomit comes from was the word they used for people exiting the theater because they would exit it very quickly upon the show being finished. And so that's how we actually get the word vomit, which was like...
It's like
okay. Right. They had some really interesting grasses and different things growing. Here's actually the docks where they would unload the coal way out into the Mediterranean Sea. This particular inscription... I'm going to skip ahead to another picture here so you can see it, actually talks about Pontius Pilate. And it references him. You can see now when I flip back, now that I've told you what it says, you can see the us Pilate. And it talks about Pontius Pilate being stationed here. We actually would see the remains of his palace. But Rafi was really good about stopping, and he would explain the culture and the history and the importance biblically, because the Jewish people understand the importance of everything through the Old Testament. So he was an excellent guide at explaining all of these different areas. The tour guides go to school in order to be tour guides. They actually go through a special training so that they fully understand the history. This is Pilate's palace, the remains of it, and the middle part that is actually looks like a big rectangle, it was his swimming pool. And then we had to show off the Mediterranean in a couple of pictures. And we walked along this area of the shore, and we saw some different buildings, and you can see how beautiful and how clear the water was. But along this right side, there was like this whole dirt long run area, and there was different theater bleachers, and there was also some buildings. Now, this particular one that I took a picture of, if you look really closely in the building, you can see a half circle with rays shooting out. And this is a pagan church. It's facing the east, and it has the half sun for the sun worship. So all of the churches, whether Christian or pagan, faced east based off of sun worship. But now you can actually see the area where we're walking along, and they would have chariot races, and they would run their chariots along 7 times, and the person to win was the first one to finish it. These were some of the storehouses here in the area. Now we're getting ready to enter into the Crusaders part. Now when the Crusaders came, they built fortresses, and they put moats around them. And then once they built their moats, they found out that Israel is a desert and doesn't have a lot of land, and moats don't work in Israel. So they still have dry moats. There are 7 dry moats in Israel from the Crusaders. Yes, perfect number. This is a tamarind tree, and it was what we call the poor man's salt. And we actually tasted it, and it tasted like salt. So that was really fascinating. And then these are the docks here, Caesarea on the shore. And this would have been where Paul left to be taken to Rome. This is where he would have been. So we know for sure that Paul would have been here at some point. This is actually where the harbor was. And then we found some more kitties.
I don't see any fish type stuff in the water, man. What's up with that?
No fishing in there? Is that what you mean?
I don't see any, like,
fish in the water.
Anything.
We were up so close to the shore. It was shallow there. They did a lot of fishing on the Galilee. Mediterranean, you'd have to be further out.
From the east coast Atlantic, maybe some crabs or something.
Right. Then we were in one of the gates here, and this gate actually was like an S, like an S that doesn't curve. It was the sharp, you know, with the corners. And so trying to overtake it the way you normally would with soldiers, it would be murder on the troops. And so they were talking about how as they would come up with one form of gate, they would have to come up with a new way to conquer that town, and eventually it would get conquered, and then they'd have to come up with a new way to defend themselves. And so that's how we've continued advancing our weapons. And as we were leaving, we walked past this vendor who was selling fresh fruit juice. And this was typical. You would see vendors selling fresh fruit juice, all sorts of fresh things. Fresh was in abundance. The land is just flowing with fruit. And I didn't get Armand, our bus driver, in the position I wanted, but when we were walking up this time, this is a really good shot of our bus, but Armand was polishing the bus. So we teased Armand that the bus was his baby. So this is Eddie actually reading instructions about how to use his video camcorder. So it was actually a guy reading instructions before he used something, so I had to get that on camera.
Well, he should have read it before he...
Yeah, but I couldn't see his face. I think it was actually a woman.
No, it was Eddie.
With a man's watch on.
Then we went to see the Roman aqueducts, because Rome built Caesarea on the shore, and then they found out that there was no fresh water there. So they had to build miles of aqueducts to bring water to the town, and they're still standing. But you actually get close to the shore where it would have crossed part of the sea at the very end, and you can see where the sea has ripped it away. These homes here in Caesarea on the shore go for up to $1 million. They're really not that big. I mean, they're probably 2,000 square feet, but private homes are very, very expensive, especially when you get into the Northern Galilee.
That's why you're building
guys a strip. Right. And then in this shot, we had actually left Caesarea, and we're starting to head towards Haifa, and you can see a little bit more of the aqueduct as it heads towards the mountains where the spring was. And we would pass a trout farm.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. So they're actually raising It's a fish farm. You know, it could have been tilapia. Tilapia or trout was what they raised there. And you can see the villages growing and all the produce down in the valleys and how they've reclaimed the land. Now, this is a reservoir that they use. When the rains come in the winter, they store up the water for the rest of the year. Now, here, we're in Haifa, and of course, right now in the news, we're hearing all about the fires and the smoke that's blowing over Haifa. So, we were in that area on Tuesday.
So, is that
any
throwing the match?
No, that's not any throwing the match. But you can see how it's a port town. And as you look behind us, here we go. Here's a better shot. You can see these different towns. The furthest town up in the upper left-hand side, you can see a little white dot there. That's actually over into Syria. So we're seeing a Syrian town at that point. Now, in this next picture, you can see the two, they look like giant corn stacks in the sense, but they're made out of concrete. If you look towards the middle, that's actually their oil refinery to make gas. They bring oil in from Sweden and refine it inside the country because, of course, the Arabs won't sell gas and oil to Israel, so they have to import it from other places. Gas was about $7 a gallon in Israel. Yes. Right. And diesel was about $8 a gallon. So our bus was burning up quite a bit. These buildings here with the green roofs were actually Hare Krishna buildings. So they had that there.
No.
Yes. If you look really closely in this picture in the middle, you can see the gray ship. And that is actually an Israeli warship that we spotted in the harbor. And then in the next picture, you can see these buildings with the orange roofs. And those were a German settlement. And when, I think it was the British came in, I'm not quite sure who came in. Anyway, they made the Germans leave and they deported them to Australia. But this was their village. And it's amazing how much this land has been fought over. And this was our first olive tree that we spotted. And we also spotted a bird of paradise. And a really pretty waterfall. And then we were up on, starting into the Carmel mountain ranges, we were looking back down on Haifa, and we spotted one more warship steaming out of the harbor. And then we went by the gardens that they have there in Haifa, and they were just gorgeous. And then we started driving up through the Carmel mountains. And as we were driving, Monty told us, take note of this gas station, and then I'll tell you a story about it later. And when we were actually up on Mount Carmel, Monty told us a story about this gas station, that it was his first time being in the land, and he really didn't know where he was or, you know, what he was doing. He was just kind of filling out the land. It was his very first trip. He was with Brent Avery, who was our tour coordinator, and a couple of other guys. And they were driving through Haifa, and their hotel room reservations had fallen through. So they were trying to figure out where they were going to stay. They had an Israeli friend who was working on somewhere for them to stay. And Monty felt like the Lord said, pull over here. I want you to see something. And so he pulls over the gas station. He gets out. He looks around. He's like, okay, guys, I know God told me to pull over here, but I'm sure not seeing anything. Do you guys see anything I'm supposed to see? And nobody could figure out why they were supposed to pull over. So they went ahead and left. And about an hour later, they were actually down in Haifa, and their Israeli friend called and said, Monty, I've got good news, but I've got bad news. I found you a place to stay. It's at a hotel, but I can't give you directions. All I can tell you is it's across from this certain gas station on the road up to Mount Carmel. It was this gas station that God had told him to pull over at. And Monty's like, that's the only place in Haifa I actually know how to get to. So he knew where to get them to get to their hotel for that night. So here we are actually up on Mount Carmel where Elijah challenged the prophets. And we're overlooking the valley where the Battle of Armageddon will go. Mm-hmm, that was the statue of Elijah behind him. The fires are up in Mount Carmel area. Yes. You can actually see that dirt hill, the gray dirt hill down below, is a tell. So it's old debris that's been forming into a mountain. Now, in this picture, the town that's up on the hill that you can see all those different buildings, that's Nazareth. We did not go to Nazareth because it is mostly a Muslim village, so they were concerned for our safety for taking us there. In this next picture, you can see the green, like, S kind of curving back and forth, and that's the river that provides the water for this valley. And then in this picture, you see the V shape in the background. That is the Israeli Air Force Base. They built the Air Force Base, and then they realized that all of the mountains around it could actually see exactly what they were doing. So they built underground airplane hangars. So the planes are actually underground. They peel the ground back with the hangar lids when they need to use the planes. So before I go to the next picture, I actually have a little video clip that I'm going to show you here. All right, this is actually just a little sample of what we were doing every time we went somewhere.
Verse 20, so Ahab sent unto all the children of Israel and gathered the prophets together unto Mount Carmel. And Eliyahu came unto all the people and said, how long will you be between two opinions? If the Lord be God, follow him, and if he fail, follow him. And the people answered him not a word. Now, growing up and going to church and everything, when I always read this, I always had in my mind that Baal was like a separate religion from the faith in the God of Israel. But when I did study on this and I put the teaching out on my Elijah message and ministry DVD, I learned that Baal worship was mixed worship. It was worship of the God of Israel mixed with paganism. And because of the mixture, the Bible calls it Baal worship.
So every place we went, we would have a teaching, and that was one of my favorites, was actually understanding that. Yes, you're looking at the Valley of Armageddon. Then we went up to Tel Megiddo, and we were able to see this model down below and kind of give us an ideal. And this is actually where Solomon had horse stables that we would end up seeing. Now, this is another view back over the Valley of Armageddon. And leading up into Tel Megiddo, we stopped in the gates because the gates are formed like two W's that are facing each other. And they would actually build them in that shape for two reasons. One was for safety because it gave them a three-gate structure, but the other was the fact that it represented a shen, which is the Hebrew letter representing Yahweh. And so the shen was always put on the gates because it was really Yahweh who was protecting them. And so they always put them in that shape. And it also meant that he could come in anytime he wanted. Now you'll notice there's like a wood beam here. The part below the wood beam was in place when they started uncovering the town. The part above it, the stones were down on the ground, so they put them back in place to represent what it was like, but they didn't find it in that exact structure. This is Lynn, Monty's wife, behind the camera, and that was normally where you could find her. She loved to take pictures of the group and make sure that we had various pictures. So here I am in the gateway. And the way they excavated this was really fascinating. They actually kind of cut pie slices out of different sections so that they didn't destroy it, but they could actually reveal what the town was like. This is where they stored their food. And then this is a picture of a rock, which looks like okay. But that rock is this rock in my hand. I brought this rock home from Israel. And then we actually saw the horse stables.
And you didn't get from the gravel pit?
I didn't, I'm being honest.
Yeah, you say.
And then this particular kibbutz, we're looking onto a kibbutz, is almost all Holocaust survivors. And so that was really interesting to see them next there. Now we're getting ready to go down into a tunnel. And as we climb down the steps through this tunnel, we're going to walk down and we're going to see the reservoir. Because the spring was actually outside of the town. They dug an underground tunnel to bring the water into a reservoir so that even if they had an enemy attacking them, the enemy couldn't figure out how they were still getting water. It wouldn't look like they were getting water, but yet they had water. And then we drove up to Tiberias. This picture here of the building with the couple of tanks outside is actually the largest dairy processing plant in Israel.
Dairy processing.
Then we saw cows. We would see a lot of cattle. This road, we're on the road right now when I'm taking the picture. So you can see that we're going to do a big, tight curve back, and then we're going to keep curving. We're curving our way down to the Sea of Galilee, because the Sea of Galilee is technically underneath sea level. I think it's like 200 feet below sea level or something like that. And it was getting late, and so everybody was falling asleep on the bus. Here's our first glimpse of the Sea of Galilee.
Well, of course, because they were
filling up. And then we were coming into Tiberias. And that night, after supper, Eddie did a teaching, and then Monty had to add a few words, and then Eddie added a few more words, and then Monty added a few more words, and we finally went to bed at 11 o'clock that night. The next morning, we had breakfast, and this hotel and the one in Jerusalem were okay on food. The one in Tel Aviv was the best, but their breakfasts were hot, and they had huge spreads. I mean, you can kind of get a sense in this picture how big the spreads were. I mean, it was full every morning and every evening. The thing I really liked about the hotel in Tiberias was that they had a lounge kind of social room, and you could go in and get hot chocolate, you could get, you know, any type of drinks or beverages at any point, and everything was all-inclusive at the hotel. There was some cattle grazing on the hill the next morning. The next morning, we started out by going down to the Jordan or Yarden River and doing mikvahs. So Monty and Eddie did their mikvahs first and were each other's witnesses.
Tell us what that means.
Mikvah is the Hebrew word for baptism. In Hebraic thought, you don't just get baptized one time. You are mikvahed or cleansed before you go to the temple. A lot of times it's a time of rededication. For most of us that did mikvahs, because I did do a mikvah, it was a time of coming before the Lord in his land and dedicating ourselves to him. So these are the pictures from my mikvah as well. And came up all wet, like I was supposed to. Actually, my head covering was dry in about 5 minutes.
So would have worn a shower cap.
After we left the Jordan, we went to the first kibbutz, which is about 100 years old. And, of course, kibbutzes were started one for all for one. They each have their own apartments. But everything is owned as a community. And so we walked up into one of the areas, and Rafi began explaining that. They were begun as a way for protection and for safety. And each of the families, each person can hold the job they desire. Some are teachers on the kibbutz. A lot of them are working in agriculture. Some of them are doctors and nurses and actually work off the kibbutz, but they bring the money home to the kibbutz. And each family is then given so many points to spend at the store, because they eat their meals commonly, so they don't have to buy groceries or different things, but they have points that they can buy, like if their family wants ice cream one night, or, you know, that they're not just restricted to exactly what they do in the kibbutz. There is some independence, but yet they do everything as a community. So it was really interesting, and they had some interesting artwork. You could definitely tell they had done it for all of us visitors, but they were reusing toilet bowls, printers, toasters, TVs, all sorts of things. So then from there, we started driving along the bottom edge of the Golan Heights. These are the Golan Height Mountains. And the border, we'll see here in a minute, but they were growing bananas in this area. Now, there's the border with Syria. Before they took the Golan Heights back in the Six-Day War, that fence was the border. So try defending yourself from them being up on the mountains above you. They were just shooting rockets down, and they had full control, I mean, of really doing a lot of damage. This picture has the black. There was actually volcanoes here a long time ago, and so there's still the black dirt from it. They also do some controlled fires to keep the underbrush down. This particular picture, if you look up in the upper part, there's a stone church, and that is where they believe that Yeshua, or Jesus, drove the demon out of the man and into the pigs, and the pigs would have then gone into the Sea of Galilee. This is the only place along the shore of the Galilee that the cliffs are steep enough for the pigs to have actually gone down to their death. Of course, the street signs were always interesting because they were in Hebrew, Arabic, and English. This is the northern part of the Jordan River, and you can see how the vegetation just grows right down to it. It's very lush, but the river is very shallow, and it's shallow in most places. Where we did the mikvahs was actually one of the deepest places, because as soon as I got in it all the way, it was coming up to my shoulders. Then our next stop was Capernaum, which was the home of Peter, and Eddie did a nice teaching there explaining a lot of the background. In this particular picture, Monty was explaining about slavery, because we know that the people of Capernaum were eventually taken off into slavery. And he's holding a small branch, and what they would do is they'd actually take that branch, drive it through the person's nose, and they would lead them by that branch. And they would be naked, beaten, you know, totally conquested when they were taken off into slavery. But one of the neat things that we saw while we were in Capernaum was this particular engraving, and it was makes a reference to John and James, the sons of Zebedee, which we know also lived in the town of Capernaum. We saw an old-fashioned olive press while we were there, and then we went into the synagogue. The lower black stones would have been from the time of Jesus or Yeshua, and then the newer stones, the white stones, would have been from the 4th century. And so we actually got to sit in the synagogue, and Monty did a little bit of a teaching while we were in the synagogue. And then we turned, kind of walked through the town ruins as much as we wanted to, and we went over to see the other site in Capernaum. But before, I want to point out these pillars here in the synagogue. It's three pillars side by side forming one. And the point of that is that the one represents truth and the other two represent the two witnesses to truth. And that was very commonly found in the synagogues there. This is what is believed to be Peter's house. So we don't know for sure. I mean, there wasn't any, you know, inscription on it that this is Peter's house, but it is believed to be Peter's house. And yes, we saw another cat. But it was amazing the amount of engraving that they had, and just how they really were able to do a lot of things with just hand and chisel, and how God had given them the creativity. Now, this is the parking lot where we got back on the bus, getting ready to leave, and I'm in the aisle, standing there, looking forward at the bus's mirrors across from it. And so it was really interesting how they would pack these buses in. And so there'd be like 5 going to the right, 5 in front of you, and 5 going to the left. And literally, we had to have 2 buses pull out before we could leave. That's how tight they would pack us in. They said that we were so at the height of tourist season that every single bus and every single hotel room was in use. Our next stop was the kibbutz where the Jesus boat was found, and that boat is 1,950 years old.
How did they know that was Jesus' boat?
We don't know that it was Jesus's. We don't know that it was Jesus' boat. It's called the Jesus boat because it is from the time that he would have been on earth. It would have also held 13 people, so while it may not be his specific boat, it is the size that he would have been in. So that's why it's called the Jesus boat. And they actually found the nails from it, and then they found the boat. But what's interesting is that the boat is made up of 12 wood types. Anybody want to put that together with the 12 tribes?
Sure.
So.
And the 12 dumb demons, sure.
Right. So it was very fascinating to see. Then we went out for a cruise on the Sea of Galilee. And Monty had told us that in the land we would all have a point where we just had our special moment, where it was us and Yeshua. And I had my special moment on the boat, and I'd like to share that with you because they actually videoed what caused that, of when I just really wanted to freeze time in place and to say, you know, Lord, this is your land, and I would love for peace to reign here forever. And I know that won't happen right now, but that it eventually will. So, in fact, Eddie was having so much fun, and he was so relaxed on the boat that Monty was doing a teaching, and he goes, hey, Monty, Eddie, you want to add anything? And Eddie actually said no. It was the first time he refused to say, he actually said no. And about 15 minutes later, apparently Monty had gotten him enough out of his mental relaxation that he then decided to add some comments to it. In this picture right here, you can actually see the church and the trees kind of up on the hill. This is the Mount of Beatitudes that you're seeing. We would visit it the next morning.
Why do they call it that?
It's where the Sermon on the Mount was preached. It's the naturally occurring amphitheater.
Yeah, so you have to. Tell me these things. Mount Beatitudes could be my wife, could be his wife.
Now, this is the Israeli gentleman here, and I'm going to show you a video. He sang a very beautiful song in Hebrew for us.
Shalom aleinu, ve'al kol
So he actually sang the entire song for us on the boat, and that was just absolutely, that was my moment with the Lord, totally communing with him on the Sea of Galilee. But, of course, the cruise had to come to an end. This is actually our hotel. They took us back to Tiberias. We cruised from just below Capernaum all the way down to Tiberias. And then we went out to dinner that night for St. Peter's Fish. And Eddie had warned me that St. Peter's Fish is extremely bony tilapia. And you can see the size of the fish. Now, here it is after I've cleaned it off. It almost looks bigger.
It almost
looks
what?
Bigger.
Bigger.
Doesn't it almost look bigger?
Yep.
Oh, bigger. Okay.
Did it
have
more a
coin it.
In its mouth?
No, it didn't have any coin in its mouth.
Well, it wasn't St. Peter's Fish.
I know. So, then that night, we actually went and saw a light show. We had to choose. We had a very difficult choice between either a teaching, Eddie was doing another teaching, or going to see the light show.
Light show.
Now, light show. Thankfully, he was doing Hebrew Roots 101, which I've heard multiple times, so I begged his pardon, and Lynn and I both went to the light show and left Monty and Eddie teaching. And then a couple other couples did, because we actually took one of the couples and their son, Jose, Cindy, and Ethan, went with us, and we went to go shopping in the market, and that's where I got my skirt, was that night. But the light show was amazing with the way they displayed the colors. And while we were watching the light show, Armand, our bus driver, was standing beside me, and I was actually able to ask him about his testimony, and he shared that with me. And he realized that the Old Testament had come to a stop, and that's what had happened in Judaism, but that through the Messiah, the Old Testament had never really come to a stop, that it was still happening, and that the promises had never left the people. And that's what convinced him to believe in the Messiah. So it was really neat to hear that. And then after that, Armand always had kind of a special smile every time I would see him, because he knew that I understood what he believed, and I respected him for that. And he was just so servant-hearted. He was really kind. In fact, the CD that I was playing earlier when you guys first got here, called From the Bible for Revival, was the CD that Armand played for us in the bus, which is a messianic CD. So we got back and we actually got to sneak some pictures in from the balcony of Eddie and Monty teaching that night. The next morning, we left and we were headed up along the Sea of the Galilee. And I'm not quite sure why that picture was thrown in there. It was thrown. But anyway, there's a couple of pictures messed up in here. Hang on, let's see if we could. Okay. I know. This is Eddie teaching on the Mount of Beatitudes. And we were able to go up and actually see the Mount of Beatitudes. Now, there is a Catholic church there, which was. Okay, now pictures are really messed up here. Okay, there we go. Now we're back to. I don't know what happened. There was actually a Catholic church on the Mount of Beatitudes. And so we were able to go out in the gardens around the Catholic church. But the trees you see behind us were where Yeshua would have taught the disciples. And you can see down into the grove of fruit and that's growing there, that the people would have been seated there for the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew. Now, the lady that's in the picture beside me is Cindy, and she was my seatmate. She and I actually know each other on Facebook, so we were excited to finally get to meet and spend some time with each other. And then once we left the Mount of Beatitudes, we went to a place called the House of Galilee. Okay. Now, I don't have any pictures from in the House of Galilee. It was the Catholics built a monastery / church / guest building to be able to reach out to the Jews. And it's the first time that the Catholics have actually made an attempt to reach out to the Jews and say, you know what, we share a common heritage. And while there was a lot of things in there that we totally disagreed with, the reason we went there was Rafi, our tour guide, really, really, really wanted to show us this. And Monty could not remember having ever been there. He did end up going there last year and doesn't want to take groups there. But it was a chance for us to see how what the Catholics representing Christianity had done harm to the Jews, and how the Jews really believed that the Christians had turned against them, and how Catholics were able to make this official stance and to make a voice of saying, you know what, we need to acknowledge that we have a common heritage. And because of what the House of Galilee had meant to Rafi, Rafi was listening to our message that you can still keep Torah. You don't have to do away with Torah. You can still believe in the Torah and believe in the Messiah. And so he was asking numerous questions. In fact, up until then, he actually was, we were talking about Sukkot, and Eddie told Rafi that Monty has Sukkot with over 650 families full-time, and he could not believe him. In fact, he actually asked Monty, you really have that many families? He said, you guys do Sukkot better than we do as Israelis. And so we were able to leave an amazing testimony with them that was something they had never seen before. Now, for some reason, some pictures are jumbled up. These couple pictures are actually teachings in Jerusalem that Eddie was doing in the group that was listening. Now we're back in order. We have Capernaum. No, this is not Capernaum. This is Chorazin, which Yeshua denounced in Matthew. And he went in to teach, and they rejected his message, and then he denounced them, and they are still in ruins to today. So it was really interesting to see how when he denounced them, he really did denounce them. And okay, there's some Jerusalem pictures that are named the same name that are getting thrown in here for some crazy reason, but we'll skip back to them in a little bit. We saw school children there. They take the school children around and teach them just like they do their military. So we would see a lot of school children and a lot of military. They do hands-on learning in Israel, which is totally different than what we do here in the States. This is the judgment seat of Elijah, which was where the judgment seat of Moses that they use in each of the tabernacles or synagogues. We would see a lot more agriculture here as we drove along. And this is our next stop, which was Tel Dan. And Tel Dan was a spring. It's where the River Jordan actually begins. And this is where the king of Jeroboam would build his imitation temple and his imitation calf. So it was extremely sad to see, you know, this beautiful spring that had been ruined by that abomination. And it was actually, here's more of the spring. Through that abomination that the 10 northern tribes were sent into exile. So it's actually one of Eddie's favorite places up in the Galilee, but we all decided that we were going to live down towards Capernaum.
When?
I don't know. We'll figure that one out. So let me skip through here. You're seeing some pictures from Jerusalem which aren't supposed to be in here. Okay, there is the king. I know, it's on that. It's on sort by date, but it's doing something funny, I'm not sure. Here is the king's judgment seat that he would have been sitting on as you went into the city. So that was fascinating to see the ruins of that. And then this is another dig that we saw along the way. And here's the verse. And the king made two calves of gold, and he set one in Bethel, and the other put he in Dan, 1 Kings 12:28-29. And we were in Dan. And you can see the size of the altar here that we were actually would have had in the temple because it was an imitation. We know that it would have been that same size. And we saw our first up close and personal with one of the soldiers. It was actually an Israeli soldier. It was a girl. And she was with a group of Arab school children. Any group of school children that's greater than 15 has to have an Israeli soldier with them at all times when they're traveling as a group for protection. Because those soldiers keep in contact with what is going on and they're able to immediately protect the children.
Now,
so,
why does she not have a bunch of equipment in like a uniform or?
Because she's with the children.
Oh, okay.
It's to help her blend in a little bit more. So, of course, we did a nice long teaching up here in Tel Dan. I mean, the gun makes her stand out enough. We spotted her without any trouble. So, and they also had trees built along in here. I'm going to pull this off for 1 second. Okay, now that we got this working properly, this was a gate up in the Tel Dan area that we saw. And it was called Solomon's Gate. And then after we left here, we headed to get lunch. And by this point, we were all craving American food, and we had our choice of either falafel, shawarmas, or McDonald's.
Yeah.
And we went to McDonald's.
We're the last place.
I know, but it was kind of funny because the entire menu is in Hebrew and it's all priced in shekels. And they don't make hamburgers like we do. I mean, their hamburgers are much bigger. And so it was interesting to really experience that. Now, here we are driving up further into the Golan Heights. The
question is, were they better?
They were about the same. Now, this here, where we're at right now, is we went to the goddess. There was a goddess called Pan, and there's a grotto, and it's called the Gates of Hell. And this is actually in Caesarea Philippi. And, God. And there's Eddie and I sitting under a fig tree. And there is Monty holding a fig leaf. And that fig leaves represent excuses in Jewish thought. And so they did a teaching kind of explaining what that was. And this is also where Yeshua would have asked Peter, said, on this rock I build my church. And he also asked the disciples, right, the Catholics claim that. He also asks here, in the front of this temple to the goddess Pan, he said, who are you going to choose to serve this day? Am I the Messiah or am I not? So he was asking them to literally make a choice. They're in front of a temple to a pagan god, and they're standing with the Messiah. Who are you going to serve today? And they made their declaration of faith in him at this point. This is another olive tree. These olives are about 2 weeks overripe. But it was our chance to actually kind of get up close and personal to olives. They had done the olive harvest 2 weeks earlier. No. I don't like olives.
You don't like olives.
I don't like olives. So, this was us getting back on the bus here. And I'm actually going to pause here for a second because I want to show you something as we go to get on the bus. We would do the roll call. I've mentioned it before. And Rafi started teaching us our numbers in Hebrew. And the first part of the roll call is in here.
One.
Stein.
Shalosh.
Arba.
Amen.
Chet.
Eva.
Shmone.
Efrat.
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 So you can hear we would get to 11 in Hebrew, and then we'd get lost, and the rest of them would end up doing it in English. But it was really fun for us to begin learning our Hebrew letters. So after we left Caesarea Philippi, you can see the terracing here of the agriculture, and we also even saw a whole herd of horses going by. And that was really neat to continue to see how they were just restoring the land and making things grow. Then we headed up here into a military base. They had actually, in the Six-Day War, this is where the tanks were defending Israel. And Rafi was in that Six-Day War. He was in one of those tanks, and so he was able to tell us some stories. And you can see this lake to the right of it, there is kind of a white spot that you would have seen. And to the left, there was another white spot. I'm going to flip back so you can see it. You can kind of see and draw this line along the white spots along the lake. That is the current border with Syria. So that's how close we were to another country. And we went around in the bunkers, and Eddie was having a blast. And you can see how the bunkers were. The guys just absolutely loved this. And I'm walking by, and all of a sudden I felt a slap on my leg, and it was Sherman hiding in one of the spots, reaching out, trying to scare us all to death.
Did
he scare you? Yes, he scared me. I shrieked, and I'm like, ah! What in the world? this was the picture that Eddie wanted me to make sure I got of him defending me and protecting me on this border with Syria so that my mom would know I was safe. So you can see he has some real fancy guns. They also had made statues out of the tank remnants, and this is Eddie sharing a kiddush cup with one, and then this is the one Eddie picked for me because he said, I'm always so full of energy and excitement. So that one described me. And then, of course, that night we did another teaching, as we did every night. And it was just wonderful to combine seeing the land with more teachings. Now, this particular picture is my roommate, Don. And we had asked the hotel for some washcloths, and this is what they brought us, their hand towels. They did not know what washcloths were, really, in the land.
Maybe they thought you were really
dirty. I don't know. These olive trees right here were public olive trees. They actually plant the olive trees along the road so that you, if you were poor and you didn't have an olive tree, you could actually go and harvest your olives as in this public area. And then the next picture here that is a military outpost, because we're beginning to head up towards the Gaza Strip. Today we're going to drive through the Gaza Strip, but we actually stopped by Beit Shean, which is an old city. It was abandoned in the 8th century due to an earthquake, and only in the last 100 years has it been rebuilt. Now, this is actually a Roman spa. They would heat a fire up, and they would bring the water in and let it steam, and that was the remains of it that we were by.
The morons would actually heat water in a desert?
Mm-hmm.
The
Romans loved their spas.
They loved their spas.
Yeah, they had all of
them. So this was actually the road there. You could see the road that they actually had put kind of a curve into it so that the water would drain properly. But you can also see the damage that was done by the earthquakes. Now this hill right here, is the hill that Saul, Jonathan, and his other two sons were killed on. So we actually were able to see that. This is a dig that they were currently doing. We would constantly see different digs. They're always digging and doing more archaeological work, because even though land is precious in the area, they value understanding their history. We actually saw a shepherd with his sheep and the dog that was herding them. And then I got this next picture right afterwards, which was really interesting, because this every single person in this picture is in our group. So you can see how far we're spread out like sheep. You know, all we like sheep have gone astray. Perfect example of that. Now, this was the line to the bathroom. So you can see Monty's in line to go to the bathroom. And this is the Roman public bathrooms. No one actually used them, but they all had to go in there and sit and show us what the bathrooms look like. So.
And the great mysteries of the bathroom.
Yes. And then we went by and we actually saw the theater. There was another theater here. And I'd like to show you this other little video clip, because while we were in the theater, Rafi, our guide, Eddie, and Sherman sang us the Shema. To realize what you don't see in that video is the fact that we are about 300 feet from Eddie, Sherman, and Rafi, and that I'm recording it on a Nikon Coolpix camera, which has a decent mic if you're close, but that's how far away they were, and I was getting that good of sound quality. So the sound quality in the theater is amazing. And then after we left the theater, which is the half circle, we drove by the amphitheater, which is where they would have put the believers with the lions. So we didn't really spend a lot of time there. But then we started heading through the Gaza, through the West Bank. And it was just amazing to see all of the agriculture that was growing in this area. You can see this kibbutz just has greenhouses upon greenhouses. And they're growing broccoli and strawberries. And this is what the land looks like naturally. I mean, it's dry. It is a desert. We also saw some sheep and goats being herded. Mostly goats, not as many sheep. And that one, their shepherd was actually on horseback.
Well, the reason why is sheep ruin grass.
Right. And then we started seeing camels. This was our first camel to notice. And then there were more camels. And so that was really neat to actually see the camels in the land. And we continued on through the desert. Here's your options for transportation. A camel, a car, or a bus. You pick. And then this was, this town here that we're seeing is the town of Jericho. And we left there and we started driving by some Bedouin villages. They choose to live like this. They have been offered villages, Bedouin villages, specifically for them with homes that the Israelis would build for them, and they refuse. They still live in absolute poverty of their own choice. We went to Genesis Land, and this was one of my favorite stops. We saw the camels ready and waiting for us to ride. We went inside and were greeted by Eliezer, Abraham's servant, who wanted to take us to visit Abraham. And he explained a little bit of the history of Abraham's Abraham's journey. And our entire group, whoever wanted, part of our group was able to ride camels down. And Eddie and I were actually the last two on camels, which was a blessing because it was about a half mile ride down. The ones who rode it later didn't get near as long of a ride, so we actually got to really enjoy riding the camel. No, we had a really nice and friendly camel, but he, when they go up and down, it's really bumpy, and you can see Eddie's kind of giving that camel a look, like, I'm not sure if I like you or not. But Abraham greeted us. And he offered us cool water, and we actually went in his tent, and you can see we're sitting on mattresses around a low table, very Israeli style.
Well, he looks good for his age.
And we were treated to a total Israeli meal. We had the pitas with the hummus and all the toppings. We had lamb kebabs with rice and chicken cooked in date honey, and then we had dried fruit.
Whoa. Abraham gave the Lord cheeseburgers.
I know. And what was really interesting was the fact that Eddie actually went up to Abraham and said, now, Abraham, according to Scripture, you fed your three visitors meat and cheese. However, your descendants don't believe it. So he was caught in quite the pickle because, of course, this is a Jewish guy that we're asking. And so he goes, well, you know, I used to do that, and now the rabbis have kind of corrected me, so I go along with the rabbis.
I'm interested in their father.
I'm like, okay, that's a good one. But I actually have a little video clip here of Abraham talking to us, and he did an excellent job.
And how can I make such a statement in front of him? Knows who they are, they're content because they know who they will be. You know what am I saying? Speaking of riddles. A person knows what his family does and not. Yeah? So you know if you are born into a family of bakers.
Yes.
Oh, thank you! Helping you to ride on the camel again. But as I said, you know who you are because you know what your family does. If your family, let's say, are bakers, you know, even if you're 5 years old, that later in life you will learn to bake and become a baker. Things are that simple, yes?
The interesting thing about Abraham is we all discovered that for some reason Abraham has a slight British accent.
Yeah, I heard that. But that's not surprising considering the fact that when the Jews went over to the Holy Land after the war, they actually were terrorists against the British.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So now,
trying to reap what they sowed.
Right. So here we are outside of Abraham's tent with Abraham. This was one of the plants that they actually used to season our food with. And then we started heading up to Jerusalem. We got on the bus. This picture of this truck is because it's JCB on the tractor. I'm not quite sure. I don't remember what the seasoning was. But this particular picture is because my initials are JCB and there is a truck that actually says JCB. But this is the security checkpoint as we left the West Bank. We were waved on through the security because of the fact that we were traveling with an Israeli tour guide. And they immediately know just from looking at each other that whether you're Arab or Israeli or what. And Monty announced to us, he said, it is my pleasure, guys, to take you to the next stop. It is my joy to take you up to Jerusalem. And as we got near Jerusalem, we were going up, and they said, keep your eyes glued to the left of the bus. And Armand turned on the song for us called The Holy City by John Starnes from the CD that I have. And I actually have the video clip of us going up to Jerusalem that I want to share with you. So,
where are we?
By Jerusalem.
Woohoo!
Look to the left.
And whatever they say, I thought
to go. So here you can see that we're approaching the tunnel. And as we come into the tunnel, we're being told to keep our eyes to the left. Yes. We all move. Women were crying, and the men are teary-eyed, and nobody can take their eyes off of the left side of the bus. And then after we actually got up to Jerusalem, we stopped on a promenade, and this is where these pictures come from, these next two or three, looking down on Jerusalem. This one was taken from the bus after I flipped it off a video. I was able to get that picture. And then these two are from the promenade that we were up on, looking down on Jerusalem. And it was just absolutely gorgeous. While we were up on that promenade, we were actually able to do the special blessing and the cup of wine over Jerusalem that you traditionally do. Then we actually started driving through Jerusalem, and we could see the small streets and the new buildings and the old buildings. And they were going to take us to a grocery market because they didn't want to overwhelm us, but the grocery store was already closed because Shabbat was coming on, so they took us to the open-air market. And as you can see, it's extremely crowded, like a flea market would be. Almost everything except for this was in Hebrew. So everything's in Hebrew. Everybody's speaking Hebrew. It's really crowded. It was overwhelming to me in many ways, but it was an experience of a lifetime. And thankfully, you know, Eddie's been a bachelor for 40-plus years, and I really kind of expected that I might see him in the morning and see him in the evening, but he was very attentive and very protective, like an uncle to me. And he watched over me, and so he was, like, right on top of me almost the whole time we were in the market because he knew I was totally uncomfortable. So we went through, and we were looking for things for our Shabbat meal because we, of course, wouldn't be shopping or be out and about on Shabbat. And then after we finished shopping, Eddie had to show that he was making sure I was good and taken protected, so we found some girl soldiers. We saw the Hasidic there in the market shopping, and Monty was a little worried about all 39 of us being let loose in the market, but he had to make sure, you know, we all got back. Now, this picture, I kind of want to stop here on this picture. You can see, if you look closely, the two men in the round felt-type hats. It's not a real good shot, but see him there in the middle?
Yeah.
That's actually the Sabbath police. They were coming around with... Yes, that is the Sabbath police. They were coming around with silver horns, yelling, Shabbat is coming, Shabbat is coming, and making sure that all the stores were actually closing.
Well, what,
yes, they are officially called the Sabbath police. I don't know. So here we were all waiting for the bus. We were jokingly told this was our, that this picture of this building under construction was our hotel. But in reality, our hotel was behind that. So this was our picture of the hotel, the Crown Plaza in Jerusalem. So as we came up to the Crown Plaza, we Monty explained to the entire group that we were going to go ahead and release Rafi and Armand from their roles as our driver and tour guide from Friday afternoon about 4:30 before the Shabbat came on until Sunday morning. We would not see them again. And sent them off with Shabbat Shalom as a blessing, the song that we sing here. And it was interesting because Armand made two comments. The first one was that we haven't had Shabbat off in 3 months. This was their first Shabbat off in 3 months. The second was, you guys are better than the Jewish groups. Even the Jewish groups expected their tour guide and tour bus driver to drive them around on Shabbat.
And they wouldn't violate themselves, but they expected their tour guide to.
Yeah. Correct. So that the testimony that we were able to leave with them, that Hebrew Roots believers living what we truly believed, was absolutely amazing. And then that night, here's Jerusalem, the Sabbath has come on. They actually sound the all clear air siren as Shabbat comes on and makes it official so that you know Shabbat is there. And then we were able to see some of the different families doing Kiddush in the hotel that were staying there. And Lynn lit the candles for us ladies. Kiddush is what we did here for Shabbat. So we were doing that there in Jerusalem. Monty led the entire group in Kiddush. And it was interesting, the next day during our Sabbath service, one of the ladies would comment that it was interesting for her to watch the Jewish families looking at us. You know, you could tell we were travelers. You could tell that many of us were not Jewish. And she said, you know, here she was in shorts and very casual. And then she said, and then some of us are dressed. And she kind of motioned at me, and Eddie supplied her with the word Hebraically. You know, so we were a whole variety of people. And yet here we were doing Kiddush and keeping Sabbath. And the Jews were kind of looking at us like, huh? And, you know, there's Joseph standing before them, the tribe of Joseph, Ephraim and Manasseh, and they're not quite sure what to do with us.
Well, because they do it because it's a law. They don't do it out of love.
Exactly. So that night after dinner, a few of us played Phase 10 and just kind of relaxed as a group. And then the next day, myself and Cindy, her husband Jose, and Ethan went for a walk. Now, they also, in Jerusalem, but they also had Shabbat elevators, which run, and yes, and they stop at every floor. Now, since our hotel had 21 floors, they had one that went evens and one that went odds. Now, I got on one. Sherman and I were both headed up to our rooms from dinner or something. And so we got on one, and it was a Shabbat elevator. And we didn't realize it was a Shabbat elevator. And so we got on it, and it closed the doors. And all of a sudden, it's shooting up, and it goes all the way to the 21st floor. And so by this point, we realize what has happened. Then it goes all the way up, and then it works its way down. And I'm, like, on the 5th floor, and he's on the 7th floor. And so we just finally... We're laughing so hard, we sink down to the floor of the elevator, and we just sit there and laugh, and then we kind of talk our way as the elevator makes its way down. But it was interesting. One of the ladies actually was on a Sabbath elevator, and she went to press the button, not realizing it was a Sabbath elevator, and one of the Jewish people on there goes, "Don't touch the button! Don't touch the button! That's work! Don't touch the button!" in an absolute panic, and it's like... Work?
Yeah, work to say, don't touch the button, don't touch the button.
Yeah. I know. Touch the button. So, but it was an interesting experience nonetheless and made for some good laughs. But
they were serious.
They were dead serious. They were absolutely serious. But when we went for our walk, it was interesting. This is on Shabbat. There were still cars being driven in the town. So it was really interesting for me to see, you know, that they still were. Now, here is produce from the land. This is bananas that actually still had the blossoms on them. They're that fresh. And then you can see in this next picture that there's a grape on the bottom of a coffee cup. And that's a kiwi. See how big? Those are seedless grapes. It would take 6 of those grapes to make a banana and 2 kiwis to make a banana. I mean, that's how big this produce was. And it was good.
Yes, and that's cantaloupe?
A cantaloupe. The cantaloupe was a little wee. Yes, it was seedless grapes. And then this was our Torah service. We actually did, Monty taught the Torah portion there in the land on Shabbat. And then we watched the sunset. Some of us ladies were down by the pool and we watched the sunset on Shabbat. Eddie did find a computer. There was a couple of the ladies that had access to one of the rooms that had a computer, so he and I were able to check emails and Facebook until we got kicked out, but that was kind of interesting to see. There was some views of Jerusalem, and here's Eddie teaching in the land. We had a teaching every night except for Sunday night when we went to the Western Wall or the Wailing Wall. Here's driving through Jerusalem. This is going to be our first day in Jerusalem. We're driving through a Hasidic neighborhood here. You can see how tight the roads are and how close people are. Now, that wall that has all of those papers on it, they don't have a news channel, but they post news on these flyers in Hebrew, and that's how they see their news. This is the Mercy Gate, or the Eastern Gate that Yeshua will return through. And this is an old section of the wall surrounding Old Jerusalem. And then we had a view over towards the Mount of Olives that we could see here. And this is Zion's Gate that we would walk through here as we went into the Old City. We typically would go in through Zion's Gate. And what was really interesting was that these cars could fit through here. And it is a tight S. And you just about couldn't fit a car through there while there was people in there. This is what is believed to be the upper room. We don't know for sure. It makes sense based on the logistics of the day that this very well could be the upper room. It would have only been from this pillar that the lady is standing beside to the wall to the left. And the reason it makes sense is there's a prophecy that he would come from the throne of David. David's tomb is below this room that is believed to be the upper room. You can see the flag up there where the upper room is believed, and then now here we are in David's tomb. We actually went to David's tomb and saw that they segregated it because it's controlled by the Hasidic. The women's could see half of it and the men could see the other. So they were actually doing some remodeling of the tomb, and so you can see actually the men see a bigger section of it than the women do. So Eddie took the camera on one side and I took the camera on the other side so we could actually see both sides on the camera. Here's the car going through Zion's Gate that we would see, and it was just amazing how they could actually fit it. And you can see how tight the Jerusalem streets are. Most of the Jerusalem streets in Old Town Jerusalem are actually walking only. This is the Chabad Lubavitch Synagogue, which actually does do some publishing work here in the States. So they have some connections in the U.S. and Canada. This is an old city street in Jerusalem. It's about 2,000 years old or so. And so you can see how we're coming down to it and the walkways are really tight. And this is a painting of the recreation of what the streets would have looked like during the time of Yeshua. And there's another soldier going by. I mean, that was just everyday common occurrence. Here's some of the shops in Jerusalem. And this painting, I absolutely fell in love with it. And I actually brought a print of it home. Our next stop was a place called the Shorashim, which means roots. And this is Moish, who welcomed us to his store. And there's Moish, Eddie, and myself. And I'm going to stop it here for a second. I have a video of Moish, but it's 20 minutes long. So if anyone wants to see it, they can see it. But I'm not going to play it as part of this presentation. The two things that I really took away from Moish's presentation, he's an Orthodox Jew. He doesn't believe in the Messiah, but he respects us, and he has made it his ministry to help the Christians understand the Jews. And he teaches that one of the things between the Christians and the Jews is that we call things different names. You know, they call it a mikvah, we call it baptism, but we're really referencing the same thing, the same root, that we all come from the same root. And the key is for us to recognize that we do come from the same root.
Exactly.
And he made two points that were really neat that I just really drove home, the Lord drove home for me, is one, We don't go to the land because we want to go to the land. We don't just go of our own free will. It's the Father's land, so he has to invite us to come to his land. So if we were there, he had sent us an invitation to come to his land. And the other thing was that when we came back, we would try to tell people about the land. We would bring pictures back and we'd bring stories back, like I'm sharing today. But in no way, shape, or form could we ever encapsulate the amazing things that the Lord did in our life, spiritually, mentally, and emotionally, and the actual emotions and the things that we went through physically in seeing his land. There's no way to 100% share it. We could share a portion of it, but we couldn't truly share it. Even with those that were on the tour, for us to try and talk about it to each other, we couldn't share, and that it would always be a special gift within our hearts. And I think both things that he said were very true. This next picture, after we left there, we kind of wandered through the streets a little bit. I actually, Daddy got his prayer shawl from here that we're still waiting to come from Israel. Hopefully.
He's got, but he doesn't have.
Right, he's got, but he doesn't have. This is the Wall Archaeological Museum. I think I have one picture from there, or maybe from the outside, because we weren't allowed to take pictures inside. But it was actually a... the old city ruins from about 2,000 years ago that they had built over, but you can still go in the museum and see. This is the Quarter Cafe, and I had the best latke there ever. It wasn't greasy. It was delicious. Yes. That was a good of good ones. This is the menorah that they've built for the temple. It was interesting. According to Scripture, it is to be 100% gold. And the menorah that they built is made out of acacia wood coated in gold. So it's not 100% to Scripture instruction. So it'll be interesting to see what the Lord really thinks of that.
Well, he's
going to
destroy it.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, after we walked past that, we went up onto a balcony area where we could look down on the Wailing Wall. We would actually go to the Wailing Wall, which is also called the Western Wall or the Kotel. It has three names, same place. Later that day. Now, I want to mention there's a scripture that talks about Jerusalem having a plaza and a moat. Now, the Kotel is called the plaza. It is truly a plaza. A moat, defined, is actually a dig. There are digs on two sides of the plaza. And this prophecy, this description of Jerusalem having a plaza and a moat, refers to the end of days. And only in the last 15 years has it had both a plaza and a moat.
Oh, Jesse.
Uh-huh.
Did you also hear about where the Muslims, the Palestinians, to goad everybody, are building right up to the edge of the top of the Wailing Wall?
Yes. We were actually near the Wailing Wall when we heard the first Muslim call to prayer, and as Eddie called it, air pollution. And they have their speakers up above, and they broadcast in such a way that you're at the Wailing Wall, and they're broadcasting. That was one reason why they took us at night, because they knew that we wouldn't have to deal with that. But it was so disturbing, and I couldn't understand it. I don't understand Arabic. But as soon as I heard them begin the call to prayer, it just made your skin crawl.
It's 3 o'clock in all as well.
There are a whole series of things that they say, and I don't remember what they are.
Yes. So this next picture is of a Torah scribe. Eddie actually took me to see a real Torah scribe who still writes on parchment.
Did you buy one?
And actually, in answer to your question, Nicole, did I buy one? I didn't. But this was Eddie's gift to me in the land. It's actually my name in Hebrew. They translate it based on the pronunciation of your name. It's not letter to letter. It's pronunciation. And they take it, and then they find your verse. Every single one of us has our verse in Scripture. And it begins with the first letter of your name and the last letter. The verse begins the same way. It begins with the first letter and the last letter. And so they looked up my verse, Psalm 49:3, in the Jewish Bible. And it says, it's 49:2 if you're looking at like King James or something. And it says, whether rich or poor, whether high or low. And we're kind of like, what? Huh? And I'm sitting there going, okay, I think I'm supposed to be impressed at this point, but I'm not really sure about this. And Eddie goes, is there another verse that comes into your name? And I'm like, okay, at least I'm not the only one thinking this. And He says, no, that's the only one. And then I'm sitting there, I'm like, okay, Lord, is this supposed to mean something to me? You know, what is this supposed to mean? And I'm like, it clicked. That's who the Lord has called me to minister to. It doesn't matter whether it's someone rich or poor. It doesn't matter whether they're high in the world's eyes or low in the world's eyes. That's who the Lord has called me to minister to. And yes, I like to talk. And so I said that to Eddie, and he looks at me, and he goes, that's you. That is absolutely you. That verse is your verse. So, so if you want to pass it around, that's my name. It's on actual parchment, and we framed it to make sure it stayed really nice. But that was Eddie's gift to me in the land, and that was really a neat experience for us. And, of course, since Eddie and Jocelyn had taken off somewhere, everybody else had to try and figure out where we had gone and what we were up to, so we ended up bringing the whole group.
What does an actual Torah scribe do today?
He can copy the Torah, but he can copy the Torah just like they would, but it's a very long, tedious process. He actually does more of the names and more, like, verses from the Torah as gift items for the tourist. So, you know, they are dependent upon tourism for quite a bit. We then went to the Temple Institute afterwards, and we saw the model of the second temple and what that would have looked like, which you can see here.
Now, is that Herod's?
That's Herod's temple that we're looking at right now. And then these are some of the different elements that they have recreated for the third temple. The priestly garments, the table of incense, table of showbread, the different censers. So that was very interesting, the harps, to see what, kind of get a perspective. But in some ways, I also felt in my spirit that it wasn't really the way God, necessarily exactly the way God wanted things. So it'll be interesting to see what he does.
Was that a 22-string harp or a 10-string harp?
I think it was 22. This is the Knesset building. We actually drove by the Knesset where Benjamin Netanyahu meets with his cabinet. And then here we are coming back to the Wailing Wall or the Western Wall at night. And you can see this is 8 o'clock at night, or 7:30 at night, extremely busy. This is on the women's side. This is how deep it was. I was on Zoom from further back because we really didn't take pictures up right at the Wailing Wall out of kind of respect. It was just...
You got 10 rows back there.
Right. I mean, and you can see all of these notes just crammed into the wall in these little teeny tiny crevices. And even the birds were trying to find little nesting spots. But when we actually got up to the wall, this is the men's side, it was just amazing. The holiness of God was truly, truly there. So, yes, Cliff.
And if you get a chance, maybe you can find it now that you got all this high tech.
Uh-huh.
Charlotte Church did sang Jerusalem in front of the Wailing Wall at night in concert, if you know who Charlotte Church was.
Oh, okay. That would be interesting. Now, the other interesting thing at the Wailing Wall was that these notes, they get so many notes that they actually do have to remove them because people want, you know, to continue to leave notes. So what
they come by with a big vacuum cleaner.
No, they don't do that. The head rabbi comes and he cleans them out. He gathers them all into a box. They take that box and they bury it on the Mount of Olives because they believe that to be where the Messiah will return. Which is exactly what we believe, that it is where he will return. And so if you leave a note in the wall, it will forever remain in his land. So, I did.
But if we're going to be there, why can't we just tell him?
Well, you can do both. Then we went down into the rabbi's tunnels afterwards, which was really neat to see because you're walking along the temple wall. Now, there's an area, you'll see the sign for it, I took a picture of it, that right here, entrance gate to the Temple Mount, right just down a little ways from this, there was an actual gate. You can see how narrow these the tunnels are.
Are you getting two of you through there?
No, there's no getting two of us through there.
Through.
And here I am by the Wailing Wall, but... It was really interesting. We got to this spot where it was the closest to the Holy of Holies that you could get. And as we led up to it, we were kind of, you know, feeling this sense of holiness. And then we got to the area, and there was four women praying there, and it was just, like, dead. There was no spiritual sense. It was just dead. And then as we came out of it, we could really feel the presence of the Lord, and then it kind of gradually faded away. So it built up, dead spot, and then built down. And Jane and I both had the same experience, Monty's assistant that I was with at that point. And she and I were like, what happened? And we were like, there had to be someone who had the wrong spirit that was there praying, blocking the sense of the Lord. And I actually had a picture of that spot. And when I looked at the picture after I had downloaded it on my computer, there was one woman that my eye instantly went to, and I said, that was the one. And it was interesting just to see that even at his holiest spots, there's that spiritual battle going on.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
So,
they were
mm-hmm. Jews. Women. They were Jewish women. And here I am in front of the Wailing Wall, and then we went back, and I got a really nice picture of my hotel room that night. And there was two of us that were in the same hotel room, but we had twin beds that were, like, pushed side by side. And that's how they set up the... They were smaller rooms than what we're used to. Now, this is...
Colorful.
Yes, very colorful. This is on the Mount of Olives. We're looking back towards the Temple Mount, and...
And the abomination.
Oh, yes. Now...
obstacle right in front of us.
Yes, there is an obstacle.
That's a button to blow it up.
Oh, well, I would like that, David, but I guess we would probably get in a little bit of trouble. But what was really interesting that they pointed out to us is that the green area, the trees in between the two mosques, are actually where the temple would have been.
Yes.
So there is no abomination built on the temple location. It's the Temple Mount that's been desecrated, but the place where the temple actually belongs is still preserved.
Michael Rood tells a story about there's a little thing about 150 yards or so from the abomination there.
Mm-hmm.
It's called the Dome of the Spirits, and he says that there's that they believe that that's exactly where the Holy of Holies had been.
Mm.
And the Muslims are scared to death to go anywhere near it.
Really?
The Dome of the Spirits?
The Dome of the Spirits, yes.
Huh.
Mm. We were the last one not be when the Father comes.
Right. So then we went into this garden area. We're on the Mount of Olives. We're up in the upper part, and we could see the Mercy Gate really well at this point.
Yeah, the Mercy Gate. Notice the
the Muslim cemetery in front of it. The Muslims think it's going to keep the Messiah out. Sure. There's going to be an earthquake first. He'll take care of that problem. There's Eddie and I on the Mount of Olives.
She sounds like
and so this is actually looking down on the City of David. The City of David is outside of Old Jerusalem. We got some really neat pictures from up here. And then when we left the Mount of Olives and we're walking down to the Garden of Gethsemane, there were so many Muslim vendors. And Monty had told us and warned us, he said, if you can leave monetary items, anything of value, leave it on the bus. If you absolutely do not have to have it on you, leave it on the bus. So, I mean, even those of us that were wearing money belts and different things like that, we're taking them off and leaving them on the bus because we're in a Muslim quarter, where the Mount of Olives is currently in a Muslim quarter. And the Muslim vendors would just get up really close to you and they'd want you to buy things. And they actually had someone on a previous tour who did not listen and did not stay in the group, and he had a money belt still on that had about $3,500, and he lost it all on the Mount of Olives.
Yeah.
So they had been very careful.
Alibaba is 40 thieves.
Rafi was in the front, and Monty was in the back, and they kept us as a very tight group going through there. And you're actually going down a very steep hill, and you're walking with your feet turned out, trying to be really careful and stay together as a group. And we did not have anybody that was hurt. We didn't have anybody that lost anything. So the Lord just really protected our group.
Did one of the Muslims say
something? Yes, one of the Muslims actually was trying to sell us some different things. And he goes, when we went and buy from him and we're all shaking our head as a group, no, no, no. He goes, so what? Your tour guide told you don't buy from the Muslims? So we got down into the Garden of Gethsemane, which is a Catholic site. And so we went and we kind of wandered around the gardens area. And this is a tree that's around 2,000, 2,100 years old. So that would have been there during the time of Yeshua. But there's quite a few different trees that are very old. And we got some really neat pictures from this area just to see the trees growing and the beauty of what the Father is doing and preserved. Yes?
Isn't it like an oxymoron on that? Like the tree would have been there, but then the boat's like 6,000 years old?
No, the boat was 1,950 years old.
Oh,
So the boat's about the same. There's a... Yes, that's what I was just getting ready to tell. Okay, the other story I want to tell about the Mount of Olives before I go down to the southern steps is that when we were on the Mount of Olives, particularly up here where we were standing and taking some of the different pictures with the Temple Mount, we were straight across from where the temple would have been. And there's two places that were called the Place of the Skull, the Mount of Olives and the place called Golgotha, which is where the Catholics and most of the Christians believed Yeshua was crucified. Mm-hmm. Now, so it could be one of these two places. But we have one other piece of evidence that tells us which of the two it had to be. There's the testimony of the centurion where he says that he saw the temple veil rent from the top to the bottom. There is only one place in the entire city of Jerusalem that as a Gentile I would possibly be able to see the temple veil. And that would be from the Mount of Olives. Interestingly enough, when that temple veil was rent, as the Father looked out from the mercy seat on the Holy of Holies, he would be looking across the altar, and he would see Yeshua raised up above the altar. Mm-hmm. So he was literally raised up above the altar and became our sacrifice. There's another evidence that is also the fact that he would have been crucified on the Mount of Olives. And that is the fact that we are told he is our atonement sacrifice. The Yom Kippur Day of Atonement sacrifice has always been done on the Mount of Olives. So for him to fulfill that prophecy, he would have had to be crucified on the Mount of Olives. So we have three evidences that he was crucified on the Mount of Olives. And that was just really neat to actually see that place. And we would later, Rafi would take us over, there was a group of us that saw the Muslim and Christian quarters, and we saw the Church of the Sepulchre, and there is no way from the Church of the Sepulchre, which also has Golgotha, that you could have possibly seen the temple veil rent. Now, here is a couple of pictures. We were coming into the city on Tuesday, which is a bat mitzvah day, and we actually saw some bat mitzvahs going on as we came in to the town. And I have a little video clip.
Where did bat mitzvah come from?
Bat mitzvah is the... It's the rite of passage for a young man. And we'll talk about that a little bit more later. But here is actually a little video clip. And you can hear how joyous they were. So you could hear, but that was when we really heard the shofars and different things blowing.
Was that what that was?
The shofars. And they also had other instruments that they were playing.
So the bar.
Those are small ranch horns, not the kudu horns.
Right. And then I got a picture with three of the Israeli soldiers. And then a couple of them were playing hat switcheroo with Eddie. So there's Eddie wearing an Israeli soldier hat, and they were wearing his Rebbe hat. So then we're here in the area along the Temple Mount, and actually this next picture behind Monty, this is the corner of the Temple Mount, and this is where it's believed that James, the apostle, was thrown off the Temple Mount. And then this road is 2,000 years old, and you can see the destruction, and this is from the temple being destroyed in 70 AD and the huge stones being thrown over the edge. So here's our shoes actually literally on ground that Yeshua would have walked on. This is a Hebrew inscription that talks about the corner, says to the place of trumpeting. And this is where the trumpeter would have announced the inauguration and the close of the Sabbath. So they actually found that inscription there. These are some of the shops along the temple area where the sacrifices would have been sold. And you can see how they had steps that allowed you to kind of climb up along in there. These are the southern steps leading up towards the temple area. And we actually sat there, and I literally felt like I was baking. It was hot. Monty did a brief teaching there. We're all like, okay, Monty, we've got our tans. Let's go. We did see the mikvahs that they would have used going up to the temple. And then we went over to see Cephas's house, the high priest, where Yeshua was brought and tried. These are the steps that would have been used leading Yeshua up to Cephas's house. They are over 2,000 years old, so we know that they would have been there during that time. Eddie read Psalm 88 while we were there, which is a psalm of distress, and we actually believe it could have been written describing the distress the Messiah would go through, or, you know, that he did go through. We went down into Cephas's house, and we actually saw this prison, and it's well lit, but it's very deep, and they would have lowered him in by ropes, and this is where he would have been kept overnight. It would have been extremely scary just to see the depth of it. After we left there...
That's what they did with Jeremiah as well. Mm-hmm. Lowered him down by ropes into the dungeon.
Exactly. After we left there, we went shopping some in the Jewish quarter, and it was really funny because Eddie would go shopping with me. He was very protective, and he'd go, so where do you want to go? And I'd pick the stores we wanted to go, and I actually took Eddie shopping. So, but then after we went shopping, we had about an hour free time in the Jewish quarter, and then a group of us went through the Muslim quarter, which is where this picture is from. And then we went over to the Christian quarter, which is where this picture is from. And then we saw the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, which is this picture. Now, I'm going to zoom in on the windows right here. And the reason the windows, I took a picture of them, is because the Church of the Holy Sepulchre is actually run by six different Catholic denominations.
Right.
And one denomination said, it's our responsibility to clean the windows. And the other one said, no, it's our responsibility. And so they were having an argument over who was going to clean the windows. And as you can tell,
but turns out nobody cleans the windows.
That's right.
Because they all formed a committee and they're still
trying to.
That's right.
3,000 years now.
Exactly. So this is the Holy Sepulchre, and it was amazing, the huge lines. But it was also interesting just to see, in a sense, the darkness that prevailed there. In the many of the Jewish places, it was just so light and it was worshipful. Whereas here, it was almost like a mourning place, almost like you'd walked into a place of death. But what was most interesting is there was actually some old Jewish graves, and you could see Eddie's here in front of one, and you can see Ethan starting to crawl back in there. And we went back in this tunnel about 15 feet. We had to have a candle in order to go back there, but we actually kind of got to crawl in and see what some old Jewish burial caves would have been like. So that was a neat experience. And then this next picture is Golgotha, which from where we were located, we would have been in this northwest, you could say, of the temple, if I'm just arbitrarily picking north. And there's no way you could have seen the temple veil.
I mean, you said that that inside that church, it was kind of dark like death.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is the Church of the Sepulchre, right?
Right. Well, exactly. after that, we went through a shopping mall. A very modern Israeli shopping mall, and it looks just like ours. In fact, in this picture, you can see the Gap signs. I mean, they had American stores, just everything was in Hebrew, and then they're actually building a Waldorf Astoria hotel right there. And, oh, yes. So, I want to show you one little video clip, and then we have our last day and leaving Jerusalem. But this video clip was of our group. As we were getting ready to leave from the shopping area, we were waiting for our bus, and they got us to singing.
The Lord is building Jerusalem, building better than the castles he built.
So we actually sang the Lord is building up Jerusalem in Jerusalem. And then that night was our last night for a teaching that Eddie did for our group. And we knew that it would be our last night because we were checking out of the hotel in the morning. And every night we probably had about 20 to 30 out of the 39 that were there for teaching. So we had a really good portion. We drove down to the Dead Sea, and we were driving through the desert. These are the jars like the Dead Sea Scrolls were found in, and we actually saw recreations of the Dead Sea Scrolls. And then this cave is where the Dead Sea Scrolls were found. So we did actually get to see it. Couldn't go in it. It's way down there. You can see the perspective now with us in front of it. But while we were there, Eddie actually... Eddie actually saw this article called Non-Jews as the Saviors of Judaism, and it was written by a rabbi who was talking about the fact that they needed to teach non-Jews the basics of Judaism, basically living Torah without being a Jew. Uh-huh. And it was interesting to kind of see the perspective that the Jews are now beginning to realize that there's some importance of non-Jews, and they're starting to recognize that. So it was fascinating for us to find that article on our last day there.
But do you notice that there was only a 7 and 6 letter
Savior? There's no U.
Right.
No U.
So it's not a Savior of man.
Right. This is our first glimpse at the Dead Sea. You can kind of see some of the salt. We went to a place called Ahava where they make
yes,
lotions. Well, and here's where they actually bottle it, Aunt Debbie.
Kidding.
No!
That's not that modern.
Yes, it's that modern, Aunt Debbie. But I didn't actually buy anything because while it had all of the really good stuff from the Dead Sea, it also had 6 of the 7 chemicals that they tell you are not good for your skin in it. So I went... Yes. Yes.
Laurel sulfate.
All that bad stuff. So now this is Masada, which we would go up on. Now, for those of you that don't know, I do not like heights. I am scared to death of heights. In order to get up on Masada, you have to ride a cable car. Thanks, Uncle Mark. And I don't know how Eddie managed to convince me to do it, but I actually rode the cable car. And going up, our entire group got on one cable car, and we actually rode up with officers in training for high officer positions in the Israeli Defense Forces. So we saw them in training. Their leaders were taking them up to continue to do more training.
Oh, no, Eddie looked like he was having second thoughts.
I know.
That's awesome.
This is the view out the cable car as we're heading up. And then we were doing some teaching up on the top. And then we went exploring. And this is kind of a model to give you a perspective of the town. And the black line shows you the dividing of the bottom was all original. Above the black line was where the stones had been destroyed, and they put them back up to kind of recreate it. This is Herod had a palace up here, and so this was his visitor's area. And interestingly enough, we actually saw a visitor. You can see the little mouse right down there in the corner that you can see. And no, we didn't.
No cats.
This is the ramp that the Roman soldiers built up to Masada. Now, I had never understood, you know, what is it? Did they run out of ammunition? Did they run out of food? You know, why did they not kill the Romans? Because they're having to build a ramp up. And I finally understood when we went to Masada. The Romans were using Jewish slaves from Jerusalem to build the ramp. Mm-hmm. And so when they first started defending themselves, they realized that it was actually the Jews and the Roman soldiers were standing behind the Jews. So in order to kill the Romans, they would have had to kill their own people. And they refused to kill their own people. They rather themselves become in trouble. So they that's why the ramp was able to be built against the Jews. So here we are up on the mountain, and this is where the Israeli soldiers were being taught. They were sitting in the synagogue getting a lesson from their leader. These were the food stores. And this was one of the sets of main buildings that wasn't destroyed because they wanted to show the Romans that it wasn't due to lack of food that they died. So here we are up on top of Masada, and you can see the beautiful view down to. There's the green bus. Okay. That green bus right there in the middle is our bus. So you can see kind of a perspective of how high up we were.
There's your zip line, Sue.
And yes, there's our cable car. And actually... Actually, we were, I rode in the very front of the cable car coming down, just so you know. I really overcame my fear. We saw some of the kudzu.
Yeah,
kudu. Thank you. Kudu. And you can see them, there's a whole group of them feeding, and we got a really great picture of one of the males.
Oh, I want it.
I know. this is an Engedi, which was the spring there in the desert. That's the waterfall. This is an acacia tree, which was not only used for the temple and for the Ark of the Covenant, but you'll see here in just a second the thorns that come off of that tree. And Monty is using those, and we believe that it was probably acacia wood that was used for the crown of thorns. Yes, yeah. Those were hidden. Those are. Yeah. They were huge.
Yeah, they're much like locust trees.
And, I mean, just imagine that. So then we went to the Dead Sea.
That's what the wind got caught in.
And here we are, all kind of timidly getting in the water. Cindy and I were out there like, okay. And so then I started floating. No, it felt great. It was wonderful. And so, oh, thanks. I started out in the shallow, and then I started going out deeper, and you can see people were getting into the mud. And there is the salt block, and actually, if you notice, that yellow bag sitting up on the counter is my salt block from the Dead Sea that I brought home. That got me in, you know, security had to check and see what it really was, so my suitcase with it in there got searched, but I did actually get to bring it home without any trouble.
They're rubbing the mud because all the minerals that are in it penetrate the skin.
Yes, the mud is good for you because of all the minerals, and I actually got into the mud. Eddie could not believe it. He said, Jocelyn is way too cautious of a person. She will not get into the mud. So I actually did get into the mud.
Just to prove
he told me that after the fact. He told me that after the fact, you guys.
While you were there near the Dead Sea, did you get to see where they are excavating Sodom and Gomorrah?
No, we did not get to see that. And actually, you know what? I forgot that we came back to the hotel from the Dead Sea. That was our last night. This was our last full day. So Eddie had one more night to do teachings. And then the next morning, here's Monty getting us started, our last day. We knew that by that night, we would actually be flying out. And we went to Yad Vashem, which is the Holocaust Museum. And oh, my word. Yes, I cried. This was the memorial to the children. And they have five candles burning. And they use mirrors to make them reflect, and it's 1.5 million candle lights that you visibly see based off the mirrors. And as you go through, they're saying the names, ages, and country of origin for every single child in English, Hebrew, and Yiddish. So talk about absolute heart sobbing. And so, and then Rafi had told us, try and remember one of the children's names. And I still remember the one I picked. His name was Moish. He was 4 years old from Czechoslovakia. And he was killed in the Holocaust. And then after we went through the children's memorial, we stopped and we saw this statue of this doctor and the children. And he actually had an orphanage of 150 children. And the soldiers were going to take the children to their deaths at the gas chamber, and they said, you're a doctor. We can use you. We'll save your life if you're willing to work for us. And he said, no. The children are who I've been called to guard, and they're who I will go with. And so he chose to go to the gas chambers to continue to watch over the children until they died.
That's a man, yes.
As you know, children also are very good at scattering. And as the children were being led to the gas chambers, realizing that something wasn't right, two of the children actually made it away. Those two children in the last 2 years have come forward and identified themselves. They both survived the war and are still living. They're in their 70s. And they're like, I was one of those children that doctor cared for. And they gave testimony as to what had happened. And it was really neat. A couple of the different ones that had children went up and laid stones on the memorial. And Rafi explained to us the importance of leaving stones, because a stone represents that soul never dies and that you will never forget them. Just as we in America tend to leave plants, the plants die. Stones never die. And so that's why stones are used.
That's what we did at Ethan's, you know, and Mark's aunt just passed, and she was a Jewish from Czechoslovakia.
That's what the people that Schindler's saying did for him.
Stones. And then after we saw this memorial, we went into the main museum, and it was just amazing to see what had totally happened, and just absolutely. The view coming out was beautiful, but we saw this verse, Has the like of this happened in your days or in the days of your fathers? Tell your children about it. And let your children tell theirs and their children the next generation.
Don't forget the history.
Exactly. Don't forget your history.
Yeah,
then we went to the Jerusalem Museum, which is where the Dead Sea Scrolls are actually kept, and they have a model of Jerusalem. So this is a model from the Second Temple period, that we saw, and you can see the different sections of the town and how they're built. This is Herod's palace that would have been built up on the up behind the temple. And then we actually got a picture of Monty and his wife Lynn, myself, Eddie, Lauren, and Jane. And so it was kind of the six of us, which was really neat because since I was traveling with Eddie and Lynn, Jane was traveling with Monty and Lynn, and of course her husband Lauren was with them, the three of us that were kind of the helpers got to be really near the teachers. And so we were constantly learning things and having a conversation. And so I think in some ways the trip meant the most to the three of us because of the relationship we already had and going to the land and actually getting to see it through their eyes. And that was one of the neat things, was that Eddie really tried to show me the land through his eyes. And this was his ninth trip. And so just to see it through his eyes when he knew so much of the history and so much of the biblical parts, even though they would do the teachings for the entire group, Eddie would often kind of, you know, we'd be walking along and he'd be explaining an additional piece to me. And that was just such a blessing. I was constantly being mentored the entire trip, just learning and learning and learning. Then we went to Ben Yehuda Street, last stop before dinner. And we got our shopping done. This is Eddie's favorite shawarma restaurant in the entire land of Israel. I got ice cream on Ben Yehuda Street. Eddie had been telling me that ice cream on Ben Yehuda Street, you have to have ice cream on Ben Yehuda Street. Well, I have to say that the ice cream at the hotel was better and that our homemade ice cream was better. It was good, but it wasn't the best. So, and then there's Eddie on Ben Yehuda Street. And
well, you have to remember, he's a bachelor.
This,
that's right.
Yes. This is Danny Boy's shop. Danny Boy is actually the one who Eddie has gotten the Torah scrolls from, the tallits, and I think something else that he carries. And it's also where I got Daddy's shofar cover that I brought home. So he was a really friendly, and it was neat to kind of get to interact with some of the Israelis that Eddie already knew. So I got to kind of experience a little bit of the local culture and how they interact with each other. So, and then here we are at our farewell dinner. This is Dawn, my roommate. And then you'll see a picture of Eddie, and we were that was a falafel ball. So, and then this was our last view of Jerusalem. We went up on the Haas Promenade so that we could take final pictures. And we went around in a circle, and everyone on the trip shared a moment that really meant a lot to them. And both Eddie and Monty had really been touched by seeing our reactions and by seeing, you know, what the Lord was doing in each of our lives. So that was really neat to hear how we had been able to bless them back for their leadership for us. And, of course, all of us are crying. Nobody can get a sentence out halfway straight. Here we are with Rafi, our guide, and Arman, our driver. And then our last couple of shots of Jerusalem behind us. And then once we left the Haas Promenade, we went by a hotel in Jerusalem a couple of blocks from where Eddie was staying, and we dropped Eddie off. And then we went back by the Crown Plaza, and we dropped off the 8 Texans who were spending one more night. And then we headed to the airport. And here... The Texans. And so here we are going through the airport. I made it through security without any trouble. Just long lines. It took us 2.5 hours to get through security and get back into the actual area. And here's the map again as we were going back. We actually flew back on a 747, much smaller, you know, type of setup. But here we are coming back in. And then here I am on the propeller, or the puddle jumper, leaving from Newark to head home to Philadelphia. And it was really nice. I ended up with by the time I got through security, I had a 2.5 hour wait till I could go through security and start boarding. And I was like, I am so tired. I lost my traveling buddy. I am ready to be home. I am so tired. And I was just kind of like, what am I going to do? And I'm boohooing. And I went and got a Starbucks, and that didn't help. And then I felt like the Lord told me to go ahead and walk back up and kind of around by the ticket counters. And I did. And nothing happens. It's all God's circumstances, to run into Daryl, which was the Canadian on our trip. And he had a 5-hour layover. And so he and I were able to go and get lunch and kind of sit and talk about our trip and keep each other company. So I didn't have to sit by myself for that 2.5 hour layover. And that was just such a blessing from the Lord to be able to have someone to talk to for that time.
And for the last 2.5 hours.
I know, poor guy.
Prayed for him, right?
I prayed for him. So then there I am headed home. And and I'll show you guys the last thing here that I had is. Yes. This is my passport here, and I've never traveled outside the country, so I was really, really happy that the very first visa stamp in here is November 8th, 2010, Ben Gurion Airport, Israel, 3-month visitor's visa.
Oh, my birthday.
Oh, your birthday.
Well, and my mother screamed.
And then when we were in Israel, they taught us to use shekels. And so I brought some shekels home, and it was interesting. They taught us that if it's silver colored, it's a shekel. If it's not silver colored, it's not a shekel. So this silver coin is a 1 cent. It's a very small one. It's about the size of a dime. And then this one that's about the size of a nickel is 2 shekels. It has a 2 on it. This one's about the size of a quarter, and it's 5 shekels. And it has a 5 on it. And then this one is gold in the middle and silver around the edge, and it has a 10 on it. But because it has the silver around the edge, it's a 10-shekel piece. And then these two are gold, and this one is a 1/10 of a shekel, and this one is a 1/2 of a shekel. So this is 10 cents, and this is like 50 cents. And so we had to learn to deal in shekels because a lot of the...
1/10 of a dollar.
A 1/10 of a shekel. A lot of the local vendors wouldn't deal in anything but shekels. So, you know, had to kind of figure out what really, you know, what they were going to take. Some would take American money, some would only take shekels, some would take credit cards, some wouldn't. So I felt like a little girl relearning my money. It was just an absolutely amazing experience and time of being in his land. So I hope you guys enjoyed hearing about it as much as I did, sharing and telling you about it.
Thank you so much.